And welcome into our audio cast for Friday, November 16th, 2007, from the Internet's online general aviation news service and magazine, www.avweb.com. Mike Blakeney reporting. When Art Nall saw a brief news item that the British Navy was retiring its Sea Harrier fleet, it got him thinking. Not long after, he was the owner of the world's only privately held vertical takeoff and landing military jet. Nall spoke with AvWeb's Russ Niles about the hoops he jumped through to bring the jet back home and the ups and downs of his first two flights last weekend in Maryland.
Art, you have a very unique aircraft, and you need to tell us how you came by it and what you're going to do with it.
Well, we have what we believe is the world's only flyable Sea Harrier, or Harrier of any variant, in private hands. I came by it. Process started a couple years ago. I had come across an article that said that the British government was going to terminate the Sea Harrier program, and I thought that that might would present itself an opportunity that some of these airplanes would be surplus and sold on the market. So I contacted a couple of friends of mine in the UK and said, hey, keep your eyes and ears open. If you see any of these airplanes sold, then maybe we can get a couple of them and possibly operate them. You know, they kind of kept a watch open for some of them, but most of the stuff that they were seeing come on the market really wasn't useful. The stuff was missing key components. They were missing the engines. They had been completely demilitarized and stripped of a lot of key components. And they told me that, frankly, that if you were able to get one, you'd have to really, really know Harriers to be able to even put one together for static display, much less try to get one in flying service. Most of them didn't have the logbooks. The engines would run out of service and taken out, and the engines would go over in one pile over here, and the fuselage and parts were stripped down, and it would go over another pile over here. But I got an email on a Monday morning when I came into work and said, we found one. And it looks to me like it's complete, it's intact, it looks like it just flew in, and it was an airplane that had been in the custody of the contractor, one of the contractors, British Aerospace, one of their test airplanes, and it looks like it's perfect. If you're interested, you better get your checkbook together and hurry up and get over here and take a look at it. So I made arrangements to go to England and meet up with a friend of mine who knew Harriers, was also a Harrier test pilot. We met, and he was unable to go actually look at the airplane with me, but he was able to get me to the airport where my contact picked me up, and we flew in a small private helicopter out to the middle of a field. We landed with the man flashing the lights on his car, and we were talking on a two-way radio, so we had the right field. He picked us up and took us to an airport and opened the hangar door, and there was a Harrier underneath of a spotlight. And I said, did you put the spotlight there for a dramatic effect? And he goes, nope, we've only got one light in the hangar. So we opened up the hangar doors, and as we're opening up the hangar doors so I can get a better look at this thing, I'm doing a walk around of this and was absolutely amazed. It was a pristine Harrier. I had been a squadron maintenance officer years ago, and I started doing a pre-flight on the airplane, and it was my opinion that the airplane was, from a mechanical perspective, just about ready to fly. I climbed up in the cockpit, and it was missing all of the weapons-related stuff. It was missing all of that, and it had a few holes here and there. So I asked the guy, the seller, I said, well, I need this, and he says, got it, and I need this, he says, got it. Well, I went down the list, got it, and he can get it, and he says, I guarantee you this to be a complete airplane. And I said, well, let's pull it out and put some gas in it and start it. And he says, well, we can't because the reaction control ducting to the port wing is not installed. And I said, well, that's a critical piece of equipment. Do you have it? And he said, yeah, it's sitting right over there in the corner. And I said, why isn't it installed? He says, well, the manual says you have to put it on before you install the wing, and we didn't know that at the time. And there's absolutely no way to get that on with the wing in place, and we didn't want to take the wing back off because we knew we were going to have to take the wing off the ship anyway. So that was that. But he said, any parts that were missing off of this airplane, we'll take it off of one of our other Harriers. And I said, how many Harriers do you have? And he goes, well, I got four or five. And I said, you don't even know how many Harriers you have? And he goes, well, some of them, to be honest, they're not complete airplanes. Some of them have been crashed. Some of them have crashed in the front, and some of them have crashed in the back. But we do believe we have enough to put together a complete airplane, and we will guarantee this airplane to be complete. So we completed the deal, and to his satisfaction and my satisfaction, and I wired money to him and had started the approval process with the FAA for a certification for me to fly the airplane.
And how does that all work?
Before I went to England, I called the head of the FAA Warbridge program and said, how do I get checked out in a unique, one-of-a-kind airplane that only has one cockpit? And he says, what type of airplane is it? And I said, it's a Harrier. And he immediately started laughing. And he says, give me your background. Well, I flew Harriers in the Marine Corps. I said, well, I flew them in the Marine Corps. I've got about 1,400 hours in this variant, 88 A's. I was a test pilot flying the 88B, one of the first three test pilots at Pax River to fly them. And I went down the my flying resume, and he said, stop. I'm going to sign you off to go fly it. This is the process. And there is a process for doing this where essentially the FAA gives a person a learner's permit to practice for 60 days. And within that 60 days, they expect them to be able to submit for an examination and a type rating. Now, they had made it clear that for this type of airplane, that's what they would do for a Spitfire, for a Mustang, or something like that, where there would be a similar type of airplane that could be used for training. For example, a T-6 is the commonly used trainer for Mustang, Spitfire. Most of the World War II big engine tail dragger airplanes, Warbirds, a T-6 and operated takeoff and landing from the back seat is the accepted training type of airplane. There's nothing that simulates the Harrier except for the Harrier. So I had arranged to get some simulator periods from the Marines at Cherry Point, North Carolina, and the simulator they have down there is for the 88B, which flies much nicer than an 88A, or what I had thought at the time flew better than the Sea Harrier. So we had to try to trick the simulator to fly like an 88A for me. So we turned the first is I climbed in the simulator, and I got a couple simulator periods. The first one, I flew the all-up simulator just around the traffic pattern. I went, well, this is a piece of cake. This is easy. So then we started making it harder and harder and harder. We turned off the head-up display, and I was forced to use the head-down instrument. Then we turned off the stability augmentation system in the airplane to make the airplane fly a little squirrely to increase the workload. And then we decreased the performance of the airplane so that I had to work harder to keep it in the air, and didn't really have any difficulty with any of that. And I got several simulator periods and concentrated on emergency procedures and things along that line, and sat down and discussed things with old squadron CEOs and people who were test pilots along with me and who flew the 88A, and we came up with what we thought was a reasonable transition plan of how to get me refreshed and how to get this airplane back in the air safely. So when that was done and the airplane was approved, ready for flight, the FAA issued me a letter of authorization, which is essentially my 60-day learner's permit.
You got the airplane over to it's St. Mary's County Airport, right?
Mm-hmm. The first point of entry was the airplane was taken to Georgetown, Delaware. And that was my intended base of operation, and that may end up being the base of operation for the airplane. It's got a little bit longer runway than St. Mary's County. And my representation to the maintainers and everything was the airplane's complete, it's intact, and all we need to do is put gas and oil in it, and we're going to go fly this thing. Well, that turned out to be just a tad on the naive side. Took the mechanics over there to Georgetown, and they agreed that the airplane is in tremendous physical shape, but they said, in order for the FAA to sign this airplane off, we've got some hurdles to overcome. We've got to completely go through this airplane top to bottom and be able to systematically go through every single system in this airplane. And that's exactly what we did. So based on that requirement, and the mechanics live in St. Mary's County, Maryland, and it's a 2.5-hour drive to Georgetown, Delaware, plus hotel rooms and everything, we decided it is in our best interest in the long run just to move the airplane to St. Mary's County, Maryland, where people could have access to it. We could work on it much easier. So we boxed the airplane back up again, loaded it up, transported it across the Chesapeake Bay into St. Mary's County, Maryland, put it in the hangar there. We assembled it in St. Mary's County, and we also got the assistance of some Marines from Cherry Point, North Carolina. And the airplane was complete, but we've had to essentially take every panel off of the airplane and thoroughly inspect and service and go over with a fine-tooth comb every single system in that airplane, and a lot of the systems we had to rebuild. For example, the pedostatic system. It's not just an altimeter and airspeed indicator. The pedostatics in that system, since it's a weapons, originally a weapons platform, there are pedostatic lines that go all over the entire airplane from front to back. And those had to all be traced, and the ones that were not used anymore either removed or capped off, because we can't have any pedostatic leaks, just to install a simple airspeed indicator or altimeter. And we installed an AV-8A airspeed indicator, which is what I was used to seeing as a young pilot. And, for example, we had to install a civilian radio and a civilian transponder. Well, that seems like that's simple on the face of it, too, but we have to tie into the DC voltage part of the electrical system on that airplane. And the airplane generates AC electrical power and then converts that into DC power. So that required some modifications. So there was actually a whole lot of work involved in getting this airplane to fly as a civilian airplane.
Okay, well, the big moment was last Saturday.
Yes.
How'd it go?
Actually, it went very well. We had a chase airplane airborne, and that was manned by the chief experimental test pilot for Boeing Aircraft Corporation, Ricardo Traven, and his Beech Baron. He also had a flight test engineer aboard with him. They had an emergency checklist with them. On the ground, we had a former Harrier pilot and test pilot, Joe Anderson, retired two-star Marine general, with a checklist. Everybody with two-way radios, and we briefed just a plain vanilla, let's take off, keep the landing gear down, some simple maneuvering, some simple maneuvers with the nozzles deflected, designed to verify that we could operate safely out of St. Mary's County, that we could that the airplane was controllable within the CG range for takeoff and landing, and that our fuel system would transfer, electrical system would work, the basic systems would work for just a 15-minute flight. 2 minutes after takeoff, I lost my radios. But that was one of the contingencies that we briefed, that if that were to happen, I would continue to fly the profile with no other contingencies or emergencies. I would continue to fly the profile, and the chase plane would pick up the radio calls for me, and I would just come back in and do a normal landing, which I did. The airplane flew great. I was very impressed with the way this airplane flew. When we landed, we had two or three discrepancies. One was the no radio, which was my communication cord had become disconnected, and we had modified the comm cord to pick up in-cockpit audio, and we think that could have been the problem. Whatever the problem was, we demodified that and just went back to a straight communication cord, and that seemed to fix the problem. So we said, okay, we're not going to record in-flight audio. We don't need that. And radios worked. And we had a fuel leak, which was fixed in about 15 minutes by replacing a washer. Those were our biggest gripes, and we prepared the airplane for flight the next day. The next day didn't go quite as well. The second flight, again, we had an airborne safety chase. We had crash crew or the local fire department on scene, and we had a ground-based landing signal officer there, all with emergency checklist, and we had briefed all of our contingencies and emergencies. And the first part of the flight went well. We briefed the first four maneuvers were gear cycles, gear cycle up, And that was good. Then we cycled the gear down. That was good. And then we cycled the gear back up. Then we did some basic maneuvering to 3 Gs, steep turns left and right, and some basic cruise performance. In about 11 to 12 minutes into the flight, the Hyde 1 light illuminated, and that was confirmed by decreasing Hyde 1 pressure. That's a pretty serious emergency because everything hydraulic is powered on the Hyde 1 system, and the Hyde 2 system is back up for just the flight control. So the immediately terminated the test portion of the flight and complied with the emergency procedures and set up for a vertical landing to NAS Patuxent River, which is which has the best facility for doing a vertical landing of this type of airplane. We had not intended to do a vertical landing this early in the program. We were saving that for 3 or 4 flights down the road as I got more refreshed and more comfortable in it. And it's been 16 years since I have done a vertical landing in the actual airplane, in a Harrier. But I have to tell you, once we got the LSO on station at Pax River and we had exhausted all of possibilities of getting the landing gear down and it came time to actually do the vertical landing, the airplane flew like an absolute dream. I was actually trimmed up hands off for a portion of the decelerating transition, and it was just flabbergasted how stable that airplane was. It just absolutely flew like a dream, and I'd heard comments before from John Farley, one of the early test pilots of the Harrier, that he said, you're going to love the way this airplane flies, that it flies, as many people report that it flies better than the 88B. I can certainly see why they would say that, because it just absolutely is a pleasure to fly. It does not fly like an 88A at all, in my opinion. Stabilized in the hover, and the landing gear were all visually checked by the landing signal officer from the ground, and they all 4 appeared down, but the indications inside the cockpit were unsafe. So I anticipated that on touchdown, the airplane was going to roll off either to the left or to the right. On touchdown, the nose gear collapsed, and the airplane, the nose settled down onto the deck. It looks, from the video, it looks like that's actually kind of a gentle drop. I can assure you, from inside the cockpit, it's all but gentle. It's about a 4-foot drop, and it's just like somebody picks you up in a chair and drops you 4 feet on the concrete, and it was completely unexpected by me. But secured the engine, safety ejection seat. By the way, that same type of emergency and that same type of failure has not always worked out as well as it worked out here at Pax River. There have been other instances where the cockpit crushes when the nose falls through, sometimes firing the ejection seat, and in most cases it's fatal to the pilot if the ejection seat fires. So I'm very fortunate that the seat did not fire, and I'm very fortunate that the cockpit did not crush. The damage appears at this point to be very minimal. It appears that we've got some damage to the radome, which is replaceable. It appears we have damage to the nose gear landing doors, which are replaceable. The right pedostatic boom is bent, broken. That is replaceable. And we think we've got a little skin repair near the nose reaction control, but the nose reaction control does not appear to be damaged at this point. And the engine appears to be fine. Does not appear to have suffered any FOD damage. So at this point, we don't think the damage is anything but minor, but that remains to be seen until we get the airplane back to the hangar and we can take it apart. We can do the thorough inspection, the hard landing inspection, and we're going to have to go through the ground checks all over again just to make sure we haven't got some unseen damage. We're not going to rush this thing to get it back in the air again. We'll take our time and we'll do it the right way.
Okay, assuming you get it all back together, what are you going to do with it?
The plan for this airplane is to use it in air shows, primarily up and down the East Coast, but we have the capability to take it anywhere it needs to go. If we don't fly the airplane to an air show, we will take the airplane apart and ship it. We have the shipping jigs for the fuselage, and we have the shipping jigs for the main wing. and can be shipped on two flatbed trailers.
Well, we look forward to seeing it at an air show, and please keep us up to date on the program, Art.
You can get more info on the story at Art's website, www.knowlesaviation.com. And, of course, you can get breaking general aviation news as it happens 24 hours a day at www.avweb.com. Comments on this audiocast welcome, audio news at avweb.com. And this is Mike Blakeney reporting. Thanks for listening.